Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Abs from Pinner in Middlesex, and you're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, when, if ever, is cultural appropriation a good thing? Okay, here comes the show, and remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast for myself, comedian and writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste. My producer friend, Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer.
Hello.
Pose the questions that need to be asked, and we are talking everything from...
We are talking everything from Abs from Pinner's question, which is, when is cultural appropriation a good thing? Blimey, that's a big one, Abs.
For me, the answer is when people give the culture credit they appropriate it from.
Perfect. That's a perfect answer. So we ask all the questions, right, Dane? We ask all of the questions.
All the questions that need to be asked. We encourage you to question your reality. And if you enjoy the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on Spotify, where you'll never miss an episode. And you can also find us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network. Speaking of living large, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest. Now, this guest needs no introduction, but you are getting it anyway, because this guest is a British comedian, actor, musician and presenter. He has excelled on radio, stage and screen for over three decades. On television, he first came to prominence in MTV Singled Out, as well as MTV Select, hosted his own show on Channel 4 and went on to star in the British soap operas EastEnders and Hollyoaks. But for many of you may also remember him for his amazing musical hits Mama Who The Man and 1-2-3-4 Get With The Wicked. Also an accomplished martial artist, and we go quay back from him being with Cat B on Choice FM. So if you didn't know, you should know by now, I'm introducing myself, apparently. Just kidding.
There it is.
It gives me great pleasure to finally have the man himself on the podcast. Welcome, Mr. Richard Blackwood.
Hello, sir. My name's Dane. Can we went through all of that, introduced me as Richard. I don't know the brother. Right, but no, it's good to be here, man. Good to see you.
How are you, sir, man? How have you been during lockdown? What's been happening, man?
You know what? Lockdown, I think everybody has their own truth as to what lockdown was for them. Mm-hmm. I kind of treated it as a time to, not, you know, I don't want to get spiritual and say reflect, because that's the
Absolutely, man. No, this is the space, man. You can be spiritual. We question everything. You want to be spiritual? You want to be philosophical? This is the place to do it, man. So
Definitely.
Okay. So when this COVID thing hit and the pandemic hit, nobody was prepared for that. We saw it in the distance. We thought, quote unquote, like Trump says, a Chinese thing, right? You know, and we thought, yeah, it's very far from here. It takes like maybe 24 hours to get to China, like whatever, right? You know, it's like the other side of the world, so we'd be fine. And then literally, it felt like, you know, like you watch these films and they always show the beginning
of the plane destinations, the little red dots start flashing up. I'm like, hold on, France? Wait.
You know, like I don't come from that subject from. Like, that's
my France. Do you remember as well, Richard, when we were all like, oh, no Africa yet. Yeah, no Caribbean so far. Okay. Well.
But that's what happens. We see it getting close, so then we start separating again. Because first of all, we was all the UK, right? Then when it was in France, black people were like, well, we ain't white, so we're gonna be okay. We just held, but one of the dark skinned men in the planet said, I've got it.
Do you remember? Oh my goodness. That was like, do you know, remember Magic Johnson with Magic Johnson and he was HIV positive and everyone was like, oh, that's how it happened with Idris. Like, his wife was rubbing his back and I was like, has Idris cheated? Oh no. And then he was like, I'm positive. And I was like, oh my God.
Which thing covered the whole spectrum of black colors? It was like, if we took the dark skinned man first, we always attribute dark skin as the strong. So if he took him first, Light skinned people are not in trouble, right? Right? And it took out Conan the Barbarian. So that's it. We're in trouble. So I was like, then the next thing you know, we weren't working no more. All of a sudden, we was in our houses and really in our houses. Like, there is not a nook and cranny skirting board that we haven't come acquainted to, because this thing forced us to live with our kids that we were trying to kick out. Right? Like, boyfriends and girlfriends we were trying to break up with, right? Do you know what I mean? We're spending another 4 months because they're under your roof, right? You send them outside to die. So, you know. It became really real for us. So I say all that to say, after maybe a month, just under 2 months, people started to accept, like, this is what it is. And then people were buying that at-home apparatus to train. They realized they're going to be here for a while, right? You know, we was going outside for the hour and really stretching and really enjoying the outside moments. We became accustomed to waking up in the morning, not having anything to do, but having things to do, because we've now gone, okay, we're going to have to start a rotor in the house and things that will keep my mind working and my body working and blah, blah.
New systems, right? New systems.
There you go. Now, where does it leave me? Like, I saw you, Dane, doing the stand-up, you know, in the car, the drive-through thing, right? And that's something. So that's a prime example of somebody, yourself, who said, okay, I'm going to... Because, you know, stand-up is a muscle that we have to keep.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you found a way to keep sharp by going out there and car horns, beep, 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 which normally would throw us off. Now is your form of saying, do you find me funny?
It's adaptation. And you know, I've definitely, like you said, you've learned there are some things you can't control. And if I want to pride myself on being a creative, I still want to be able to have an idea and a message and have concepts. The medium in which people realize that concept, that can change any time. You know, like, look at yourself, for example, you know, would have known initially from doing radio and then from going from radio to acting as a presenter and then having a vehicle that's more geared towards your entire narrative with the Richard Blackwood show. And then, you know, going into like soap operas and stuff like that. And, you know, for a comedian, even when the transition to like doing television where you might hit a punchline and they're like, oh, we love it. Now we've got to do a tight shot. Now we've got to do a wide shot. Now we've got to cheat over your shoulder. Yeah. And then you start thinking, you're still repeating the same punchline and everyone else is professional holding the boom mic being like, wait, no, that's a good line. What happened to this guy? And there's just another guy that's been like, yeah, scene two, because they're staying professional as well. So you have to learn to like have that, even a repetition part as well, where like, Richard, that was the best take we've ever seen. Now from the left.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the pandemic, it's not a personal journey or like a struggle. Like, this is not something I have to turn to someone and be like, I can't work because this has happened. This is, everyone's going through this. Some people aren't getting work. And, you know, I always, the perspective has always been easy, whereby I'm just kind of like, you know, some people may never go back to work. And, you know, this is a virus. People have lost family members and they can't even go to funerals and stuff like that because of, you know, the virus. So
perspective, for me, it's like, right, Dane? Perspective.
Absolutely, yeah. So just the smallest part, like sort of adjusting. And in the line of work that we're in as well, you can provide that relief to people. This has always been our function, you know, not to equate us to key workers, but on this social level, being able to like interact with people and make them laugh and, you know, just deal with people's isolation. I think that's kind of been the benefit, is that people have definitely learned, I think, over the last 5 months to value just human interaction and speaking to people and catching up with old friends. And even if it's 2 or 3 minutes of just being like, what's going on, Bridget? Long time, innit? What are you saying? How you doing?
All in the same boat, right? We're all in the same, been in the
We're
same.
All in the same boat. I see. With that being said, I feel like there's a good question coming along. So again, Richard Blackwood, as I say, it's a real pleasure, man. From a comedy perspective, I can definitely tell you one of the reasons I'm here is because you were here. I remember being in university, watching MTV Select and seeing people behind at Trocadero shouting out and going crazy. And I remember my cousin even went down to Trocadero, called us from, like, I was in Yorkshire. He's like, yeah, man, call that on the TV. So, yeah, so far as being an icon, yeah, I can't really express that enough. As our esteemed guest, we invite you to ask the first question, which we'd like to discuss for 15 minutes, and then Howard will ask a question, then I'll ask a question, and then, yeah, you go on to continue approaching legendary status. So, please, as our guest, you are welcome to ask the first question.
I guess my first question is to you, Dave, right? Mm-hmm. Just so you can use the platform to kind of speak on it, how did it make you feel when they, and not that they called you me like, for, take me out of the equation, but just I identified you by another black man, but rather than you.
Yeah.
How, what did it make you feel? Just the whole spectrum of that. What did it make you feel like?
Yeah. So, so yeah, just a background for listeners that might not know is that I'd recorded the same show as Richard, and there's some press ups were sent through for me to approve before we went promoting, and I was sent pictures of Richard Blackwood, our esteemed guest. Now, you guys will see, we do not share that much of a resemblance, as flattering as it would be, I'm no Richard Blackwood. not yet. I'm gonna get that new. I'm gonna get that cucumber water budget soon. Don't you worry. So, PT and that, and then they'll be like, "Oh my days, you two are brothers." little Richard Blackwood. It could happen. But you know, to be honest, I feel like so. So what happened was that I, you know, in the way that a lot of the time black people do rationalize these microaggressions or reductions, is that we kind of make fun of it. That's always been a cornerstone of the black narrative or editorial of comedy, is that rather than constantly bemoaning and actually lamenting racism, or we tend to like make fun of it because it's always much more of an effective tool to ridicule it. So yeah, for me, that's kind of how I felt really, is that the short answer was kind of, I got over the initial offense. And I'm not saying over it, but I think at this point in my life, you're almost desensitized to it. Mm-hmm. It's almost at a stage now, I guess, where it's like, even if you are getting to work on a show with another black man, it's so much more progressive that we even worry about it. So I kind of got over that thing. But yeah, for me, it was just like, you know, this is another opportunity to ridicule this system, which people give assurances has no flaws. So for me, yeah, I guess I felt kind of, yeah, I felt I was frustrated, but that's kind of like a constant state of being when you're working in an industry that tends to marginalize you anyway. But yeah, I just saw it as an opportunity to do what I do, make people laugh and take what can be a tragedy a lot of time for a lot of black men and make it into comedy. Because, you know, in our instance, it's maybe like a faux pas that, you know, doesn't have that much consequence. But we know, you know, on a larger scale, there are men who are in jail. There are men who are on unemployment lines. There are men in their graves or in shallow graves because they were confused for somebody else. So, you know, that was one of the reasons I wanted to address it, albeit in a funny way, because, you know, it shows you how far this can get. And really, I just felt like I could use this microaggression to highlight some of the hypocrisy even around this topic of lookalikes and stuff, because I feel like, you know, there's... that, I mean, the whole idea of generalizing in the current level of technology, for me, I don't think there's any excuse. And I think most people joined me and could understand that I was definitely displaying the whole thing in a very ironic way, even though it's a very serious thing. And that was very clear based on the response we got from a lot of the people that retweeted it and people that commented. And it's like, you know, it's a common occurrence for them a lot of the time as well. A lot of anecdotal evidence came in where a lot of people have been confused for other black people at offices.
Having a Mo in the news, Mo Gilligan, yeah, the so other Mo, week,
Mo,
right?
Mo Gilligan was in the newspaper and he was confused for the dude from...
KSI, wasn't it?
No, KSI. And also, yeah, so Mo Gilligan, as you know, you've been on Mo's show as well with Big Nasty. So they confused him for Marcel from Love Island.
No way.
Yeah, they confused him for Marcel from Love Island. You know, we had an early instance where, you know, had the tragic loss of Kobe Bryant, and then there was stock footage on the BBC of LeBron James. And
the one that sticks with me, and I think would be one of the most memorable events like that, was when Samuel Jackson was on the news in America, and they called him Lawrence Fishburne, and it's like, I think it was Lawrence Fishburne.
Was it Morgan Freeman or Lawrence Fishburne?
I think it was Lawrence Fishburne, because I think I remember seeing him wear a T-shirt saying, "I am not Lawrence Fishburne," he did a week or so later. That was a really memorable one. So there's been so many instances of it. This isn't a random occurrence what happened this week, right, guys?
Yeah. And that was a part of it. But at the same time, for me, like, it's a random occurrence. But I think now, I guess I got to the point now, Richard, where I was like, you know what? Now we're in a position where we can present this argument and there's very little excuse. So I just wanted to create that kind of discourse where essentially here is the rope. You can choose whether or not you tend to hang yourself. And people, you know, in that respect came along trying to apologize and was like, you know, you may have lost someone the job. Maybe you've gone too far. And well, why do you guys all make everything about race? And I was like, nothing here was made about race. And this is not, you know, the people, the actual company involved, they've more than like owned their responsibility. These are like detractors who constantly apologize for this thing. And they were like, yeah, but you know, it can happen. And maybe I'm racist and maybe I confuse black guys. And for me, that left it open where I was kind of like, you know, the reason why I personally feel like, again, this double standard and type of hypocrisy is because if that kid was a referee and he confused us, and those guys were from the opposing team, they'd want him crucified. They'd want him crucified. And that's happened before as well. When I think 2 years ago, Arsenal played against Southampton and...
Gibbs and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, Gibbs and Oxlade-Chamberlain. Now, obviously, those guys are both of dual heritage, but again, look very different. Even as by a simple something as the fact that Kieran Gibbs has cropped hair, and his hair is cut short, and Oxlade-Chamberlain has his hair out. So that's the first thing. Also, their names are in big letters on the back of their shirts.
Exactly. Fuck
along with the numbers. And the reason why I use a football analogy, Richard, is because, you see, the thing is, in this country, referees do make decisions. And sometimes those decisions could be erroneous or based on their poor eyesight. There are a litany of songs that describe the poor eyesight of referees, right? Still wasn't enough for English people. They were like, no. Now they go to a virtual assistant referee. So now a robot will tell you who made a mistake. If you could go that far as to have a robot tell you what offside is, you can tell the difference between two black people. In the same way, if you live in a time now where your phone will not even open unless it has the precise face recognition, there is now no excuse. If you can work out the surface of Mars and whether or not that surface has bodies of water, and you can see that from here, if you distinguish between two black men who are almost a decade apart, there is no excuse.
What it shows me, unfortunately, is all those other examples that you gave all had a far greater level of importance than our situation of two black men that are distinctly different but being classed as the same. It's the level of importance that the whole scenario of Black Lives Matter and what we've been marching for, and even referring to racism like this as microaggressions, because it's the new term now, but even still, people feel no way to go, well, you know, like I said to you, I was walking down Oxford Street, and as I say, I'm saying it here. Dane's going to talk about it in his stand-up, right? Because I haven't done stand-up in a while. I think Dane's a good person to talk about it, right? But the man walked past me, and I was on the phone, and I was just trying to get to where I was going. So I was keeping my head up. And not like, oh, you're famous, but I understand that EastEnders and Hollyoaks, you get the most notoriety in terms of people recognising you.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Massive shows.
Yeah. So I keep my head down, and one guy goes, wait, Idris. But the look he gave me was like, you thought no one recognised you. Let me tell you that. It was kinky on so many levels. It's the fact that he went, you thought I didn't recognize you. Eh?
Gotcha.
Right? Idris. I went, oh my, my tongue is very reactive. So I just went, Richard. And instead of him saying, sorry, mate, he just went, and just walked off like
what the fuck.
But here's the thing. That just ironically happened near this time when this happened with Dane. But this happens all the time.
Absolutely.
It's not Idris that I'm called, where I have to say to them I'm not, and they go, look, stop taking a piss. And I'm like, no, seriously, I am not Idris at all. And if it's not him, then it's Charles Venice, which is a good friend of mine, Chucky.
Chucky, of course, yep.
Chucky, me and Chucky stood in the same venue, next to each other, at a soap awards. and Chucky was called Richard Blackwood, next to me.
Fucking hell. What?
I can see it. As crazy as it sounds, I can see someone come up to me like, oh my God, I think I'm drunk. Two Richards? Am I drunk? Is this your twin brother, Richard?
I could not believe it. Like, you see, but that's why for me, the reason why all this what we're discussing is so important is that what it yes, we're not being called the N-word as much as we used to. When I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was very overt. Okay, so that's changed, which is great. It's progression. But what it shows still, which is what the bigger picture is that to certain, and I don't even like the fact that I have to say to certain, but obviously certain white people will jump on and go, not me, so I say to certain white people, you still do not want to acknowledge us as equals. You can't even see us as equals because you can't, your eyes are not even trained enough to identify distinct differences.
Absolutely. And I feel, yeah, absolutely, makes complete sense. And I think mainstream media takes a massive part of the responsibility for that because they've not provided enough of a range of archetypes, I don't think, for a lot of white people to make distinctions. I think this is the reason why, you know, when you have African players who come from pay francophones and former French colonies, they come and play, they have feathers in their hair and glitter and Christmas lights because they know they have to try and make the distinction on themselves and by that token their personality when they're playing football, otherwise they won't stand out. Like, you know, you watch African nations, you'll see players like Jibril Cisse and Ibrahim Bar and El Hadj Diouf. Their hair, all these crazy spikes and different colours and all this peacocking because you almost have to have this level of flamboyance as a black man in order for you to distinguish yourself from your peers. Otherwise, how are you going to stand out? And I've seen something very similar with comedy whereby people have told my peers and my friends that, oh, we can't have two of you on the same bill because how would the audience tell the difference? You've got to go at the top and the tail and stuff. And yeah, there's this idea that there's not a distinction between us. And for me, again, I call bullshit because people's cats go missing, yeah, Richard, and they put a picture of the cat up on a tree. I've never seen your cat in your life. But you assume strangers are going to see this picture of your cat that you described as black with a white dot on it and call you and go, are you looking for a black cat with a white dot? They're created around Southeast London. I think I found a cat. And they're going to be like, of course you have. So how is it that an animal with that ambiguous a description, you can find that, but you have a trouble distinguishing between like two black men who are obviously look very, very different? And I just think it's a large part of the reason is because of this lack of people being shown on TV. Because by the same token, most people who have pets will be like, I could recognize my pet out of a bunch of pets of the same species anywhere. But you never hear people going, oh, did you watch David Attenborough yesterday? I swear it was the same dog that was in that Netflix one.
Yeah.
He must be getting money, bruv. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. It's like even Lassie, you know, with Lassie and stuff, or all these dogs and stuff, there could be about 20 Lassies, but no one's ever gone like, isn't that Lassie? Not from this season. Are you dumb? That doesn't happen.
Can I ask a question about the press response to you both, which is to say, obviously it went massively, a big news story this week. And what are the positives and negatives that come out of it becoming such a big news story, in your opinion?
The negatives for me, even though it's horrible to say that I'm now used to it, you should never get used to.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a problem.
Being deemed in that way because of your colour, but it's an unfortunate thing that I am. But the negative is that it still shows that 20 years on, from when I had my own Richard Blackwood show, and let's say I was in the first leg of my career as a stand-up and then presenter, so to speak, and breaking those waves, that 20 years later, when Dane by this time has been doing it for a while, so I'm not just saying he's new, but Dane now is establishing himself in the mainstream and kicking down those doors. He's well and on TV, but yet we still do not matter enough.
Yeah.
And it's horrible to say that, but we have to call a spade a spade. It shows that we don't matter enough. And so the negative is that, and this is the part that maybe certain white people don't see, is part of the reason why we work so hard is just so that we can have just what certain white people have as just the default.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? We just want to, I remember when I when I first was able to afford certain luxurious things, mm-hmm. and I bought myself a nice car, and you know, I knew I used to wait for the police to stop me. Because I realized now that I was a black man with power. So when they would stop me, I'd be the first to go, what you stopped me for? You did this. And I go, no, I didn't. Right? Now, at most, I wouldn't just do it for doing the sake. I was right. I didn't do this thing. But I just enjoyed the fact they were trying to harass me because I couldn't wait to say, you don't know who I am, do you? Right? Mm-hmm. You know? And they'll go, what do you mean? And I go, you know what? You should continue. Continue to do what you did. Right? Just know that this is not going to go the way you think it is. And I'd always say, you chose the wrong black man today. It was like my signature statement. And I used to get such power because they would look at me and a part of them would go, this is before internet, so they couldn't just Google.
Yeah.
Right? So I said, no, radio it in. They say, you've been arrested. I go, I've never been arrested. They go, you sure? And I go, what you should do is radio in Richard C. Blackwood and see what comes up, right? So the first thing they'll do is they'll do it, you know, the Richard C. Blackwood, Clifford Blackwood, blah, blah. And they'll say, no warrant, no arrest. Then somebody go, you would hear it.
It's ridiculous.
It was like the next level to sex in terms of euphoria that I would feel when I would go, because they try to keep quiet because they know I can hear, and they go, what was that? Was that? And the woman's going on the intercom, isn't he? He's got his own show on Channel 4. And this is before, remember now, there was only five channels. You don't really have cable like that.
Exactly.
So you were on channels, you was famous.
Absolutely.
On Channel 4, it's Richard Blackwell show, right? And they'll go, leave it, right? So then they'll go, yeah, all right, look, mate, you know, and I just look at them and I go, wrong black man, innit? Wrong black man today. Now, the thing is, I could have come across as the angry black man as a stereotype, but technically I kind of was because at that precise moment, what it showed me was that I had to get myself to this level just so you could treat me the way you would treat a normal white person over there.
Absolutely.
Dane is doing shows here, there, and everywhere, on TV, blah, blah. Dane reaches a point where his name is synonymous with fame and everything that he's done over the X amount of years, just so certain police officers that want to harass him have to go, that's Dane, no, leave him.
Yeah, you have to be an exceptional just to be treated like an equal. And it's that's the thing is that, I think... with this question, for me, I can handle it. As you said, it's kind of something I'm used to. You shouldn't be used to it, but desensitized is probably the better word. But the thing that makes me despair, as you said, is that it's like now, because of confused identity, I have to prove I'm exceptional to be treated like a normal human being. Plus the fact that I always believe like by reducing who we are, then our opportunities are also reduced. And then you do get this crabs in a bucket theory where every single black creative now is panicking because they know that they see all of us as a monolith. And you see that kind of manifesting that, now they want to use this black grime artist to do this comedy show. And then this guy is doing a food show. And it's like, there are black people who have competencies in all of these subgenres of entertainment. There are loads of black chefs. There are loads of black musicians. There are loads. And they can always intersect. But it's like, with white culture, Adele is an amazingly accomplished musician. But no one's asking Adele to do Live at the Apollo. Or in the same way, you know, Ed Sheeran is not going to be doing Mock the Week. So... it's able to make that very distinction, and that's the big problem is that if we can't even get past the fact that they can't, you know, distinguish between our skin tone and our features, how are we going to be nuanced in terms of like region and our different and more varied experiences in the UK? Because I have no problem with any like white straight men as comics, for example, but there are a lot of white straight male comics who wear a suit and have dark hair, but no one is confusing Michael McIntyre for John Bishop because they live in and are from two different parts of the country. And they're not going to be confused for Peter Kay, even though Peter Kay and John Bishop are both from Lancashire, they're not going to be confused. And Michael McIntyre is from the South. He's not going to be confused with a Mickey Flanagan, who's from London, but as is Jimmy Carr, who won't be confused either. And Rod Gilbert is Welsh, and he won't be confused for Dara O'Brien, who's Irish, who won't be confused for Billy Connolly, who's Scottish. And they have all this nuanced stuff. And then, you know, someone like even James Acaster's from Kettering, and no one is going to confuse James Acaster with Joel Dommett, and he's from the Southwest. So.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
For me, that's the issue, is that if we can't even get the respect of having a distinction between both our skill as well as our appearance and our journey, like, how are we going to even nuance and get the most out of, you know, Black creativity and what we can potentially offer? So I'd say, yeah, I've had the experience, to answer the question, I've had the experience whereby I can handle it, but I want to create a foundation whereby they can't get away with it anymore for successive generations, as you said.
And the podcast, hopefully all these people who clicked on the story this week, they're listening to this and hearing you guys add to the narrative in a nuanced way that, let's be honest, the way we consume our media online doesn't allow for the kind of discourse that we've had so far on the show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a great question.
Yeah, it's amazing. And obviously we had to talk about it, right? That's needed to be done.
In the room. It would have been wrong for me not to ask the question, because
absolutely,
I've been in that place for, I would say I started to become mainstream around about 97.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tasted it, but there's so many things that we as comedians have to go through. So as I say, so to see Dane then carving his name in his niche and blah, blah, and getting through, to then have to experience that, that's why I had to ask the question. And also
absolutely
highlight the fact that, look at that, even after everything Dane's gone through to get to a certain place.
And yourself. Your distinction is also entitled as well. And this is what I mean. It's like, for my listeners, I want my listeners to Google the following images. You need to look up Tom Selleck and Burt Reynolds. Then look up Nick Nolte.
I know what he did.
Then look up Nick Nolte and Gary Busey. Right? Look those guys up and then come back to me and tell me about anyone can make that mistake.
Yeah, it's well said.
Actually, Tom Selleck, you know, yeah. both had the thick moustaches and the same, full run, right? Yeah, no, it's true. It's so true. I didn't thought about that.
No one. Yeah. That's real lookalikes for you there. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm going to move on to a completely different subject, if that's okay, because this show has a whole mixture of things that we talk about, Richard. A never-ending list. And I was thinking, when I was looking through, you know, your kind of career before we got you on the show today, about, you know, all the different things people know you for, and I think a lot of people will know you for acting from EastEnders and Hollyoaks. You know, I think, you know, some of us will remember the Richard Blackwood show, and some people will know you more from EastEnders. And obviously, you must enjoy the acting. I'm sure it's an interesting life.
Also, not leave out Donkey from Shrek, because that ran a very long time in theatres.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that did very, very well. Let's not play that down at all. So,
but my question is a real simple one, which is, you know, I'm sure there's loads of people who love watching you on screen acting. If you were to pick all time favourite actor, we're each going to put one forward. Who for you is the all time greatest? Because there's so many great names out there, and I'd be interested to know what you think.
Wow, that's a very good question. You know what? I tell you why it's a tough one, because I guess I'm acting a lot more, and I've been a very lucky comedian to have crossed over into drama. So, you know, as much as, because most comedians end up doing comedies and because they got comic timing and blah, blah. And I saw Jamie Foxx obviously do Ray. And prior to Jamie Foxx doing Ray, I too was trying to ascend to just be a comic actor. And that's it.
Right.
And then after that, I was like, okay, no, we've actually got a lot of range and we can go further when I saw Ray. And then, and at this time I was doing plays and stuff. And I was getting more serious roles, but I was throwing myself in more because I didn't limit myself before that. The glass ceiling had been broken, because prior to him, when I was growing up, it was Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy.
Mm.
That came from where I came from and then ascended. Even though, in fairness, Richard Pryor did do Lady Sings the Blues and The Mac and different films where he was a serious actor, especially Lady Sings the Blues, because that was quite a dark character that he played. And Richard Pryor was my hero. He's the reason why I started doing stand-up back in, well, I was 8 years old when I saw him on TV, and then I decided at 8 years old I wanted to do stand-up. So he essentially, him and Lenny Henry were the two. But all of them that I mentioned all ended up being comic actors and not necessarily straight actors, even though Lenny Henry started to do Othello and things like that later on. So in answer to your question, I would have said Denzel Washington at first, right? But the reason why I don't say Denzel now, this is not discrediting Quentin Denzel.
Of course, he's incredible. He's incredible, but yeah, you know.
He's an amazing actor. However, Denzel, nine times out of 10, I notice plays characters that are essentially always strong. Whether they're wrong and strong in Training Day or whether they're right and strong in John Q, they're always strong characters. Oh. I've never seen play a character that's weak or vulnerable.
Really interesting.
Like his brother, you know, the character that played his brother in Fences, the special brother, he was a vulnerable character, right? He was a weaker character. Now, actors that I rate, those are the actors that I rate that you could, I can see them doing something strong and powerful, and then they can take it all the other way where you look at them as really like, do you know what I mean? And so I would put the guy, Phoenix guy in that. First name. And
Waheem, but he used to be called Leaf. Remember, River Phoenix's brother, he used to be called Leaf Phoenix, yeah. And then they changed it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I put him in that. I would even say Eddie Murphy, because Eddie Murphy is not really renowned as a great actor, but people don't realise how great he is as an actor, because what one thing that Eddie does in his movies, which is a real testament to him, is Eddie allows the other funny person to be funny, and he will just bounce off of that. He doesn't need to command the funny, and you see it a lot in Boomerang, right? Especially he does it in a lot of films.
That's a good point about Boomerang, you know, because, you know, you're right. It's funny you say that because, like, way putting it that way is the best way, because obviously he's super funny, but you never see him trying to top people, and it bounces back and forth. Because, like, for those who don't know what Boomerang is, Boomerang was a black rom-com, was like a real iconic one. And, yeah, the comedy alumni in that film is insane because you've got Martin Lawrence, you've got David Alan Grier, Tisha Campbell, John Witherspoon, Eartha Kitt, Chris Rock, you know, so just the
that's a line
alone, right? Yeah, and that's the point. As Rich said, at no point is there you don't see anyone having to vie or battle for a valid punchline. Grace Jones is in it as well, so just the breadth of comedic talent and the ages that's involved in it. It's like, you know, just like Harlem Nights. It's like combining that much talent into one film can be very difficult. But yeah. Eddie Murphy is really good. Like, even like Eddie Murphy, like in Shrek, again, is with like Cameron Diaz and is with Mike Myers and again John Lithgow, and there's no thing where it's like Eddie Murphy has to come and prove himself.
It's a skill that he mastered, because I tell you, I'll give you just one prime example and then I'll let you answer the question about your favorite actor. But in the same scene with Grace Jones in Boomerang, he gave Grace Jones, because it's a friend of his, because she used to give him opening spots at concerts when he was younger. Mm-hmm. So they've always had that friendship. So obviously she was playing the eccentric, you know, speaking French, black people that make money back in the 80s, they would always speak French and blah, blah, and all that kind of stuff. So she played it very well, like as a woman that's not an actress and as a singer.
Yeah.
Like, she did it very well. But Eddie Murphy did a little line that was enough to show I'm funny, but it's not about me. Right. So when she's naming the perfume and she went after bath, and he went, and all he said, he said two things. He went, sorry, what? And she went after bath. And he went, I'm sorry, I thought you said bear.
You know what? Some of the subtle jokes in the first two Beverly Hills Cop films are amazing. There's so many good jokes in those first two films.
I remember in that film, you got to remember, that's Judd Nelson in Beverly Hills Cop. And in the 80s, Judd Nelson was that guy. So again, it's again being able to be in these spots and thrive without taking away from anybody else. You're right. I don't think we give... Even the Coming to America, which in itself obviously is a classic. And it's like, first of all, that film is... When someone's putting on the suits and playing different characters, pioneered that. You're not going to see a better version of that playing out in any film other than Coming to America.
The Barbershop, right?
Exactly.
The three, yeah.
But then at the same time, if you look at it, and obviously I can return to it with more educated eyes, like John Amos is in that, Arsenio Hall is in that, like, you know, Eric LaSalle, who's a great actor from ER, he's also in that as well. James L. Jones is in that film. Like, Coming to America went so well. If you don't know, the original Lion King... The mom, like Mufasa, his wife, are played by the king and queen in Coming to America. That is how influential that film is.
Yeah. And his actual character was not funny. Everybody around
that's
him.
That's such a good point. Yeah, Akeem is the straight man as well.
He's a straight man in the film.
That's such a good point.
You know what I mean? He was so nerdy and geeky that it was like everybody else, and that's what I mean by being a great actor.
That's a really good point.
The film was so brilliant, and he was able to play the straight roles. So he even made the dad that used to be in Matt Dowell's. He used to be
John Amos, because he was in Was it Good Times or something? One of those films, yeah.
All right. So even that scene when he goes, if you want to keep working here, stay off the drugs. Right? Eddie Murphy could have easily kind of delivered a line to make that even funnier as a rebuttal.
Absolutely.
And just walked out because his thing is, this is your section, right? This is not me, all right? So we look at John Amos, I think he's hilarious, but you know Eddie Murphy wrote that line.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He wrote that line. Do you know what I mean? And Samuel Jackson with him, he goes, I'll be forced to crush you.
There you go. And that's Samuel Jackson as well. And it's still back and forth, the time is put, and he's playing the straight man with Samuel straight Jackson. Man. Yeah, right. And Louis Anderson's in that film as well. Yeah, that's so much. So much
purely for the basis of running out of time on the show, Dane. Who do you think
you know
is there?
I thought I had an idea in my head, and then I thought I can't pick one, and then I thought I could have a top five. But Richard, you've given me a whole new perspective on anything.
Richard Blackwood brought levels to this conversation.
I would have probably said like Denzel because of the roles he's done and how prominent. But it's like you said, if he's not like I said, a detriment to him at all, because we just know Denzel will always choose scenery, but. It's, being the beta or the vulnerable person is not the range. But I feel like what I want to say is there's loads of amazing actors and the alumni of actors. Because for me, we can start all the way from, Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte and Cicely Tyson and work all the way down. Because you can take into account the steps they were making in terms of the beginning. But I would say, and we've discussed so many good people. So what I would rather do, maybe talk about people who I feel are now even beginning to ascend, and I think they're amazing. It's very hard, but if I have to choose, I can only get down to three, everyone. I know that's not a question, but I'm going to say...
Go for him.
So I'm going to say Viola Davis.
100%.
Great shout.
She don't miss. And like everyone says,
another level.
She's in Meryl Streep. She doesn't. And like her scene, like obviously Fences is a great film with Denzel, but her scene in Fences...
Oh gosh!
Listen,
when she gave it to him,
you can't do another take of them ones there. So that's one. And number two for me would be Mahershala Ali, because I think the character that he played in Moonlight versus the character he plays in The Green Book,
a really good actor. His style as well. He's got
real brooding, real focus, and it's just like watching it. And then by that same token, is Christoph Waltz. So Christoph Waltz played the Nazi hunter in Inglourious Basterds. And scene when he goes to the French dairy farmer's house and drinks the milk before he tells them to tell him where they're hiding the Jews, I was like,
"Ugh,
that's the most
Django."
Shit.
I mean, and him in Django, he's amazing in Django.
That scene, though, in fairness, that scene is what made Hollywood pay attention.
Absolutely. That scene in Inglourious Basterds, like he's not raising his voice, he's not using anti-Semitic language, but just the menace in his tone.
The subtlety of it.
It's that menace.
It's just outrageous.
That is very good. It's just sometimes you see that synergy, how it plays out with actor and director, whether it's Scorsese and De Niro or even like Spike Lee and Denzel Washington. But like, Tarantino.
You see it in music and football as well. Something's happening before your eyes.
There's a real synergy.
No one's forcing this to happen in that kind of way. It's happening. I mean, my person who I've just been watching a lot of his films recently and realised I would watch bad films with this person is an interesting way of me deciding is Pacino. I reckon you could put Pacino in the worst film and I'm just happy to watch it because Pacino is in it.
He knows how to lift it. Pacino, they're from that old school, Pacino, De Niro, they're all Harvey Keitel, they all come from that old school. They all used to train at the same place as well. So they come from that real concrete New York
I rewatched the reason it kind of came into my head this question is because I rewatched Devil's Advocate. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that film.
However you feel about it, that speech at the end, that's monologue. One of the best, that monologue at the end, one of the best I've ever heard.
That film is absolutely ridiculous. However,
he turned it
Pacino
down
is so good.
It's like Pacino, Any Given Sunday. Oh my god. That scene as well. Listen, that will make you go and play American football. You don't know the rules, but and that's what I mean. Yeah, that does. But yeah, the actor one is tough. And also, just on the point as well, what you said, Richard. You know, a lot of people, a lot of comedic actors, you have to give them a lot of credit because I think they, when they actually do transition into more serious roles, they do really well. Like you said, I mean, obviously yourself have done more dramatic roles. Robin Williams in Thurto Booth was really good.
Brilliant.
Jason Bateman in Ozarks is insane. Because he started off doing like dodgeball and stuff, so that's amazing. And Arrested Development. So going from a very subtle, very highbrow comedy to, again, the same thing with the thriller with Ozarks. And obviously Jim Carrey in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, man. So I think So a lot of exceptional comedians do make the effective transition as well. So
we've said some great names in the answer to this question. Good so question. All our listeners are encouraged to go and check out all of those people's films question. If you haven't seen them. But thanks for answering it. And so it's over to Dane for the final question of the show. We're going a bit longer today because we got into so deep into our first question.
Absolutely. But
over to you, Dane.
We want to value, you know. So Richard, this is a little bit of background behind this question I'm going to ask you. Essentially, again, if we have younger listeners and stuff, you may have seen, as we've mentioned, amazing comics like Mo Gilligan, as well as, you know, or more recent times like Michael Dapper as well, who's rose to prominence with Man's Not Hot. I reference these two guys because of the fact that Mo went viral and realized a new profile because he did a lot of grime MCs. So Mo, as well as being a very talented comedian and writer, is also a very avid music fan. You see that in a lot of his comedy. Obviously, before Mo as well, we had the big phenomenon online with Roll Safe and Coyote Iwumi playing RS and his aspirations as a grime MC. So again, did a fire in the booth and rose to a whole new level of prominence. And then Michael Dapper, as well as being a writer and performer, also had one of his characters, Big Shaq, have a record deal and do this film, Man's Not Hot. But before all of that, a man like Richard was doing music from Quayback. So just remember who kind of set that blueprint as well. And I've always joked to friends as well, is that like, when they give me a record deal, that's when you know I'm big. Because for me, when they let you do another type of art, that's when you've made it. That's when you've made it. And, you know, at the same time, you know, and this is not something that's just restricted to, like, you know, black comics either, because Peter Kay had his song that's The Way to Amarillo as well. And so, you know, so it's always been like, now, obviously, Richard, you have had experience in the music industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you a hypothetical scenario. Yeah. You get a phone call from your agent and they're like, Richard, you awake? Richard, I can't believe this. I just went over your first record contract and I found a small clause which says you are given a budget to be able to executive produce your own music album. Some idea. They're cool. You know, like Kanye did the whole My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Remember that? And he had everybody on it and it was amazing. Well, now they're calling this My Beautiful Laugh Richard Fantasy. They want you to put together a 10-track album of your most admired musicians, comedians, or comedians that have done music. So my question to you, Richard Blackwood, is you have to executive produce, on which you can appear as well, your own music album, 10 tracks. You can have a feature on each. Who would be on this album?
What a question.
That's a big task.
Jesus Christ. Well, okay. I would do a track. I would do a track with Big Nasty.
Nice.
Because I think Big Nasty is, like I say to him, he's an exceptional MC, but Big Nasty has carved his own lane because he can be funny. He's got his own style of funny, right, which works. Otherwise, he wouldn't have two seasons on his show or three seasons, how many now. So definitely that. It's easy for me to say Mo as well because Mo is very, very funny. And I saw he did a track with Shaggy, right, you know, and he does his thing. And I think with me, I love Mo. I prefer Mo's stand-up to his sketches. But that's because when I went to see him stand-up, and I know he came out first and he was doing the characters, and I knew he was feeding his new audience.
Yeah.
Then when he stopped and he took the mic and then started doing the stand-up, I remember I turned to Charlie, my manager, I said, now this is it, because I know how good he is as a stand-up. Right. So in a weird sort of way, it's like, I get it. Feed your audience that. Right. Yeah. Because they're your new. But I've been on the circuit to see how Mo throws down. Mm. And I know that Mo can throw down. Mm. Right. You know, so, you know, and I think he's exceptional. All the success he's getting now, he deserves.
Absolutely. Also, first time I saw Mo was in Light Bar, I think, on Brick Lane in Shoreditch. Oh, my goodness. The way he shut down the show, boy. He came late and like, I think he did a bit about going shopping, and he almost, I mean, they almost condemned the place. He brought the whole thing down. So no, I get you. I feel that way about like someone like Stormzy, who's like obviously an amazing, accomplished musician, and will play to a particular audience with certain songs. But I'm always like, I still wanted to see Wicked Skeng Man in it, just barring in the.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get I get that definitely.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, right? I would use you, right? Because I think that you have your. I mean, I'm saying certain comedians that I don't even know if they would do music, but still. But because once again, your form of comedy, you don't play to the stereotypes of being a black man, right?
Mm.
You totally go against the grain, which I think is very important, and it's become your tongue, right? You know, so you essentially what you do is, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't say you don't speak about the black experience because you do, and you speak about situations through your eyes as a black man, but. You have a knack, or it's a gift, one of the two. I'll put them both together, where you're able to speak about things that, oh, this is going to sound mad. White people can go on stage and talk about almost anything.
Yes.
Right? Black people can go on stage and they normally talk about things that correlate back to their race.
Yes.
You have found the happy medium where you could go on stage and talk about anything like what white comedians do.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's people, but that's easy. And it's like, no, it's not. It's because our brains as black people, whether it's rap or whether it's like, so Eminem used to speak about everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Eminem wasn't cornered.
Because he had that context, where he had the breadth of being able to speak about whatever he wants. Because, and it goes back to what we were talking about in the first question, because there's the breadth of range in white archetypes, you can have that kind of act. Whereas if there's a narrow idea of how people see black people, that's not just aesthetically, that's also narratively, because it's like, well, if you're black, what do we talk about? We talk about relationships and raving and this and this and this, and there's not things we can discuss, which means I've always felt that one of the reasons I did that is because I do not want any black person to feel their experience is invalidated if it doesn't include certain cultural indicators. So that's my thing, is that like there are some black people who may be into like robot wars, and they might be into like bird watching or train spotting. They shouldn't feel they're any less black than someone who has a much more, I guess, culturally rich experience growing up in Southeast London. There are black people that might live in East Anglia in Norwich, and they are one of the only other 10 black people they know, half of which are their family. But their experience is no more valid than ours. So I just wanted to, I guess, create a style which was accessible to them, but still nuanced enough that people know I have a black experience and it's different to the British one. But at the same time, it's not so nuanced that if you are a black person that lives in, you know, Edinburgh, you're this is you feel outside of this. So that's kind of why, that was the approach, like you said.
No, but and that's what I'm saying. So I've seen it. So that's why I would use you. I would use definitely one with Slim, right? Because I think Slim is an underrated but amazing comedian that could do something just like given the opportunity, right? Could fly. Kane Brown, right? You know, I might be naming some names that maybe the audience are not too.
I was about to say, our audience needs to go and check some of these guys out.
Keep dropping names because they'll just check them out. That's all good.
Yeah, because Kane Brown is a comedian that I would say, Slim and Kane are two comedians that I would say that as a comedian, if you go on stage with these people and you ain't on your A game.
Oh, yes. It's not nice to follow them. It's not nice to follow them.
No way. You're or remembered for being shit after them.
Yeah.
Right?
They'll resent you. If you go on and don't keep up the energy, they'll resent you because,
Oh, you're mad, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
So those two definitely. I'm trying to think who else.
That's a good lineup already, no, right? That's a hell of a lineup.
That track with Slim and Kane, just going to be the central one. That's the one when the women have the milk baths and pour honey in and candles, I can imagine.
It'll be a rap. But then I would also use Judy Love. Right? Because Judy Love, as I say, I like core. So it's all well and good to watch people on TV or on their internet platforms or whatever and seeing they're getting their just reward, shall I say. But once again, you go on after Judy Love in any stand-up show, you got to be ready. She will leave the place like it's torn up, like a bomb's hit.
Because you know it's with Judy as well, yeah? When Judy does a set, people aren't looking at just a comedian that's funny, yeah? To them, that's a family member. That's what's so effective about Judy. Because Judy's like your cousin. Everyone, you got a friend like Judy. Judy's like the very nice girl that's sitting next to you in the nail salon. Judy's your friend. Judy's the girl that's with you at the when you're at the drink, going to the bar getting drinks. Judy's the person that you shut up at a conversation with when you're doing your makeup in the bathroom and stuff. Like, there's just a warmth that she has whereby you're, as far as the audience is concerned, they're rooting for a friend, not just a comedian.
Yeah, yeah,
she's infectious fun, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It's just that warmth, isn't it? It's just a warmth that draws you to her, where it's like we all know somebody like Judy. Like there's always someone like Judy's always that person. That's like, you know, I can relate to. Like this works on a comedic level so well, where it's like not only is she that person making a joke, she's the person you turn to on your sofa where you're like, oh my days, did you see that? And that's why it works so well.
Yeah. She also London Hughes. Mm. I've known Miss London for many years, like before she even really embarked on stand-up. But I saw me and London was in Edinburgh together, and I was doing Typical, and she was doing To Catch a Dick, the setting up for that. And I went to see her twice, and I saw the small tiny room that she was playing, right? Even though it was a good room, but it was a small tiny room that she was playing across from me, like upstairs across from me. And literally the first time I went to see her, I went to see her with a friend, and she ripped it. And me and Kojo and Mr. C, a few of us went to see her the following, like later towards the end. And we just about got tickets because when I first went to see her, there's hardly anybody in the room, which is normal for Edinburgh.
Of course.
Then by the time it ended, Travis J, all of us went to see her. Travis J is another one, by the way, right? She annihilated. And now obviously she's in America now. She's doing her thing. So definitely London Hughes, because I think that she wasn't really respected on the circuit, and she knew that, and she went away for a while. But what I saw her do, that one woman show, yeah, she commanded all the respect. It was like you couldn't tell her nothing, and I was really proud of her. So London Hughes, and I give you two more. I would also say Gina Yashere, because Gina is on a different gear, different level.
Oh, for sure. She's the one to chase. As far as I'm concerned,
she's the one to chase for me.
For me, that is the career. You know, if things go well, if I could emulate Gina Yashere's career, I'd be a very, very happy artist. Because
can I throw it out that we should try and make this album happen?
Yeah, I mean you got a budget.
I mean, let's do it. I mean, some of those people are very busy. But I'm sure they'll be up for it. But
what if we do it for a charity? What if we do it for a charity cause? Listen, we can make it happen, Dane. I'm just saying,
Richard Blackwood, that Comic Relief is a charity about philanthropy in Africa. Surely more people of African descent should probably be involved in something like that. That's what I'm saying.
I'm with you.
That's what I'm saying.
I can get the time in between filming Hollyoaks. I ain't got no problem with that.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Watch this. Well, fine. We're going to be back in contact about Dane. You've started something with this question. That's what's happened.
Yeah, I think it's about time, man. It makes for a very good album.
So, you know what? Some of these people that I mentioned, that maybe the names are not so prominent, need to be seen, because that's the sad part, is that we've got so many great people from the circuit that if you think myself and Dane and Mo are funny, it's like, let's just take you for one day down to a normal comedy show.
Absolutely.
Down
Absolutely. Web,
and you'll forget our names after a while, right? You'll be like, wait a minute, who's this one? And it's like, who's this one? It's like, yeah, this, the reason why we're so good at what we do is because we've come from that stock.
Absolutely. Right?
You know what I mean?
I'll never forget the first time I saw Judy Love live. I honestly was like, This is outrageous. Like that, I've never, that the more people didn't know who she was, you know, was what I couldn't believe, you know, just, you know, so much energy.
It's an important point for people to note, because of obviously, especially because normally the angry disposition is synonymous with being a black person, that we're always angry. So then if you take that disposition and you go to a comedy club and you see how hard black people laugh, like you said, this is why we have the level of attitude that we have, because it's like you're taking people that are supposed to be angry all the time. And really, if we're honest, socially, don't have much to smile and laugh about. So to elicit that joy from that audience, you're always going to be able to do that in anywhere else. And that was a big part of my impetus to get in a mainstream comic. It was that I'm seeing like this level of showmanship and a level of performance to get a reaction from people who are dealing with more trauma than most ethnic and racial groups. And getting that reaction from them is like, wherever you can lift spirits in a room like this, there's no reason why you should not be doing this on a scale of, like, you know, television or in arenas and stuff. So that's a big part, is that even by myself, like you said, and that's the best way to put it, Richard, is that, you know, me and you are the tip of the iceberg. We are just one little part of your comedy palette. Once you see like the people that we've mentioned and see the range and skill that they have, like I said, then, you know, there wouldn't be a distinction between what's referred to as a Black British comedy circuit and the mainstream circuit. You'll see that some of the comedy alumni you've never heard of yet have probably typified and exemplified British culture in ways that you wouldn't even realize. You know, once you get, you know, you hear about Slim Mewson about, like, you know, his life as a dad, or even, you know, talk about, you know, even Ginny Escher in terms of being transatlantic and having a Nigerian mum, and even referencing her sexuality as well. Like, the breadth of narrative in the journey, especially now where there's such a big drive in terms of like liberalism and inclusion, you're not going to get anything more inclusive and more varied than some of the people we've mentioned.
I couldn't express it better myself.
For sure.
It's been a brilliant episode, amazing Richard. Episode. It's been amazing to talk to you. I'm so glad this happened.
No, I'm glad. No, certain things happen to bring people together, you know?
Absolutely. And I have to say again, man, even though the circumstances under which, man, I really can't thank you enough, and definitely want you to know, bro, I can always tell you humbly and openly, look up to you. As I said, as a Black Briton especially, didn't really see a lot of people like ourselves. And obviously, I'm a little bit older, but I know for a lot of my generation and some of younger peers wouldn't even have seen Lenny Henry that often on television. So, like I said, looking for a blueprint you gave us, and especially yourself, didn't have a previous one yourself to follow. So, you know, can't thank you enough for the example you set, man. And, yeah, we really hope that that has been led to a lasting presence of people like myself and Mo and all the aforementioned comedians as well.
It's nice to see. It's nice to meet, sorry to cut you, but it's nice to, see that you guys are coming through. When I see you, when I see Mo, when I see Judy Love, like those three, or let's say London Hughes, those people that are now getting mainstream success, and I can tell you personally that I've seen them perform in dives.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Like getting trains to certain places and then having to leave, they've got to catch the last train home. Right, do you know what I mean? Before they missed their train.
Last time, I didn't even make it. You had to drop me home. So, that's it. Last time, I didn't even make the train. So, yeah.
What I'm seeing these comedians, I've done it, but what I'm seeing comedians after me doing that and then getting their rewards, for me, I'm like, that's right, because I know what they've gone through to get there. And also, when I'm seeing them funny on TV, I'm like, you think that's funny? Wait till you see them live.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
what I. That's it, man.
It's been amazing for us to talk to you.
It's been
great,
man. The future is very bright, Richard, and you can definitely say that you are part of that legacy. For those who want to know more and have maybe been under a rock, where can we find your good bodies of work, Mr. Blackwood?
Well, I'm right now. I play Felix on Hollyoaks, so you know that's Channel 4. So if you do watch or if you plan to watch, I'll be on there. My stand-up wise, I'm not sure when we're all going to go back to stand-up at some point.
True, yeah.
So I just say watch this space. But if I do a stand-up or anything, it'll be on my Instagram. Like, I'll advertise it. Also, I do a thing called Siblings Talk with me and my sister, my younger sister Sophie, where we discuss. It's like a podcast, I guess, essentially. Mm-hmm. But
we'll definitely share it on our socials, Richard.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, 7 o'clock every Wednesday, Siblings Talk, and we talk about everything from racism. It doesn't matter what it is. Sometimes we ask the audience to what they would like us to discuss, and we discuss it, and then we get guest speakers on and blah, blah. So, you know, we'd love to have you on, Dana, you know, because you would be really good.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, so, but that's enough for now. So, yeah, so that's basically the stuff that I'm doing, and as I say, and then my older stuff, I guess that's all over the internet, but that's what I'm doing right
now. You can find it. I found it. I went back.
That's right. Do your Googles, do your DuckDuckGoes, do your Bings and that, do your Siris, do your Alexas.
Richard, take care of yourself. Have a good weekend.
Thank you so much, Richard. Bless, bro. Love and light, man. Thanks again.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeaste. Our guest was Richard Blackwood. You can follow Richard on Twitter at @RB_official or on Instagram at Richard Blackwood. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Decode. You can follow D on Twitter and Instagram at @OfficialDecode. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @DBQEPodcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.